Had enough of the excuse-making, lack of accountability, and psychobabble? Then you're in the right place. You're listening to The Voice of Reason, and we're here to help you reconnect with your inner common sense. Now, here's the host of The Voice of Reason, Deneen Manette.
Hello, everybody. I feel like I've been away forever. It's Deneen Manette, host of The Voice of Reason here on Talk Zone Radio. I'm so glad that you're able to join me today. I had to take some time off because I've been in a very busy trial season up here in the Bay Area, Northern California. But I am back, and I am excited to have some conversation today, bring up some issues, some things that have been resonating with me for quite some time. And I'm looking forward to spending an hour with you folks today. Once again, my name's Deneen Manette. I am the author of Ultimate Betrayal, as well as Messages for Joey, which is a common sense book to help young girls navigate through the challenges of life. So I'm also an infidelity expert, a criminal investigator, and that's something I've been doing for 24 years. And I'm also one of the commentators on HLN's Dr. Drew show. So you may have been able to catch me on a few episodes there, not lately, but, you know, previously up until they started the new format. So in any event, I want to attack a few issues today that I think are really timely and critical to what's been going on in the media, in politics, and around the country. And the first of which is, you know, right now we're in this, we're gearing up and getting ready for the political season. And as far as the candidates, I'm sure, unless you were under a rock, you watched or heard about or read about the GOP debate that occurred last Thursday, where they had the first group of five and then the second group of 10, and everyone kind of got out there. And of course, the main issue, the main person, the main draw for why they had so many people watching, they like broke records for viewership, was because of Donald Trump and his antics. And people just wanted to see what he was going to do. Someone described it as kind of like a car crash that everyone slows down to watch because you just want to see what's going on. And I noticed that, you know, surprisingly, because at the beginning of this, to me, I said, oh, you know, he's just a clown. Nobody's going to take him seriously. Nobody wants to hear what he's talking about. He's an entertainer. He's, you know, television guy. He's a mogul. He's a billionaire. He's not serious. He's all over the place. But the number of people that are supporting him and that are continuing to support him, even after he has offended and insulted so many people, is astonishing to me. And I'm beginning to feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone. And I just can't get a grasp on the amount of people that are continuing to support this guy. So I've done a lot of thinking about this. And I've tried to come up with what I can pinpoint as what is going on with this entire Trump effect, what this is all about. And this is a couple of things jumped out to me. And I noticed that one of the major things that keeps being reverberated in the media, in the press, in his speeches, in those that are following him, is that he's not politically correct, that he's not being PC. People seem to love the fact that he is not being politically correct. So I want to delve into this whole politically correct thing and discuss exactly what it is and how it is playing out in this entire GOP race or in the entire presidential race, quite frankly, in America, honestly. I want to look at what it is to be politically correct. Let me start with the definition of political correct. Political correctness, or PC, is a pejorative term used to criticize language and actions or policies seen as being excessively calculated to not offend or disadvantage any particular group of people in society. And the term only had scattered usage prior to the 1990s, but it entered mainstream usage in the United States at a time when a conservative author by the name of Dinesh D'Souza used it to condemn what he saw as left-wing efforts to advance multiculturalism through language, affirmative action, opposition to hate speech, and changes to the content of school and university curriculums. So that is the definition of what political correctness is. You know, you just, it's just being critical of language that is used to not offend disadvantaged people or people in particular groups. It's used to you know, as like I said, left-wing efforts to advance multiculturalism. To advance multiculturalism. Gosh, what a horrible thing to want to advance. Of course, my tongue is planted firmly in my cheek. But what a horrible thing to want to advance. Why would anybody want to advance multiculturalism through language, affirmative action, or opposition to hate speech? So basically, being politically correct means that you are opposing opposition to hate speech. You should be able to use whatever hate speech you want, and that is to be celebrated, I guess, by the proponents of political correctness. I want to be as hateful as I want to be, is how I am interpreting this. Correct me if I'm wrong. But I choose to be as hateful as I want to be. I choose to reject multiculturalism because I don't think that we should be a multicultural society. Even though we are, it shouldn't be celebrated, of course, because that's being politically correct. So being politically correct means I want to oppress and separate everything that is multicultural and put everyone back into their little boxes where they belong. I want to oppose people who are opposed to hate speech because that's not being politically correct. And I don't want to have anything to do with affirmative action because I like the status quo. I like the way that it is. And if you choose to want fairness in society, and if you choose to want multiculturalism, and if you choose to oppress hate speech, then you're not being PC or being PC. So I just want to make sure that everyone is clear on that, exactly what it means to be politically correct. Okay, I want to use language that offends disadvantaged or particular groups of people in society. I want to use that language if I'm not being PC. Okay, only PC people choose not to offend other people. So that's the definition of it. So when you're signing on to the I don't want to be PC crowd, you're signing on to the people who are choosing to offend, choosing to keep everybody separate, and choosing to use hate speech. Got it. So Trump is, you know, he's on this politically correct bandwagon. He says so many politically correct fools in our country. Now, he tweeted that out. There are so many politically correct fools in our country. And we have to get back to work and stop wasting time and energy on this nonsense. So his whole platform is that everybody, like I mentioned a minute ago, everybody who is down with being multicultural, affirmative action, not wanting hate speech, all of those people are fools. You're a fool if those are the things that you are a proponent of. Unless you're using language to offend people, disadvantage people in particular groups, then you're a fool. So he's interested in targeting his message to the people that aren't fools, which are the people that are really happy to offend whoever they want. And per Trump, political correctness is what's killing our country. He terms it as being a weakness. So being a compassionate human being is a weakness. Okay, I can sign on to that. Okay, so if I'm too compassionate, then I'm being weak. If I'm too respectful, I'm being weak. So being politically correct is being weak. If I'm not putting you down, if I'm not using hate speech against you, I'm weak. I get it. So apparently in an interview on CNN, this is where it kind of exploded, and this is where it really confuses me about the fact that this guy's numbers are still real high in the polls. In an interview with CNN on Friday, the GOP frontrunner Trump appeared to imply that Kelly, you know, you saw the entire debate. You saw how Megyn Kelly started off the debate asking him some very hard-line questions. And she actually asked very hard-line questions to Ben Carson as well. She asked him, you know, isn't it true that you get confused all the time and you don't know anything about a lot of stuff? I mean, that's pretty much how I interpreted it. So he was not the only person that was singled out. But he felt as though he was singled out. And apparently he appeared to imply that she was unfairly grilling him about his history of insulting women during a televised debate. This was the debate last Thursday. And he basically appeared that she was grilling him unfairly because she was bleeding through her nose and through wherever, which any person who is walking on two legs can obviously figure out that he meant that he was talking about menstruating. And, you know, his remark actually was it was blood coming out of her nose or coming out of her eyes and whatever. And that sparked outrage. And it caused, you know, him to be booted off of a lineup of a very high-profile event that took place in Georgia. But, no, he's not apologizing. He's basically standing by his words because I don't think that he could apologize to a woman. I don't think that that's within his nature. I think he's very misogynistic and that it's just not going to happen for him. But on Saturday, this past Saturday, he took to Twitter and he hit back at his critics and he wrote, you know, once again, so many politically correct fools in our country. We have to get back to work and stop wasting time and energy on this nonsense. You know, I don't know. Is PC, is being politically correct supposed to be wrong? Is being politically correct supposed to be something that we should shy away from? What happened to decorum? What happened to being polite? What happened to being considerate of our fellow man? What happened to being compassionate, caring, forward thinking? Is it wrong to be a sensitive human being? You know, I just don't understand how a group of people have embraced something, have embraced not being politically correct, when it appears to me that not being politically correct is equal to being rude, obnoxious, arrogant, an asshole. I mean, really? It seems like when somebody like Trump or others are standing up and celebrating the fact that they're not being politically correct, they are equating political correctness with rudeness. They are equating political correctness with being, you know, I'm not politically correct. So I'm rude. I'm not being politically correct. That gives me the right to be obnoxious. That gives me the right to say something that is offensive to 53% of the population, that is offensive to women. I don't care what side of the aisle you're on. I don't care what party you support. To sit there and listen to a man who obviously, I don't care what you say, obviously has a problem with women. He's on his show. He pointed out, and as was mentioned in the debate last Thursday, that, the best place for her to be is on her knees. Do you actually think he would say that to another man? Do you actually think that he would call another man fat, ugly pig or anything like that? No, those are terms that are specifically geared towards women. Those are terms that are gender specific. Nobody ever pays any attention to the attractiveness. None of the other candidates. Nobody really talks about the attractiveness and the way a man dresses as they do, let's say, a Hillary Clinton in her pantsuits or whatever. It's just so completely sexist. And for a candidate to stand up there and say he is tired of being politically correct, that tells me that he's ready to just unleash the dogs and that he's going to be free-flowing with whatever it is that he feels he needs to say, regardless of how offensive it is, regardless of how rude and obnoxious and how much of an asshole he is, just because of the fact that he can and he's tired of keeping his mouth shut. And like I've said hundreds of times in the past, just because you can say something, that does not mean you should say something. Just because it is legal to say something, that doesn't make it moral to say something. Just because you are allowed to say something, that doesn't mean that it's right to say something. It is not a smart thing to always open your mouth and say every thought that passes through your brain. There is a filter system in place for a reason. And that filter system is there to help guide us into doing and saying things that are appropriate in a given venue. How are you advocating for yourself to be the leader of the free world when you are being so sexist and are offending 53% of the population, if not more? Because my husband was offended. People with daughters are offended. People are just offended by the fact that you are talking under somebody's clothes, that you are making a comment. No, Megyn Kelly is not my favorite. I think she reminds me of a high school snotty girl. You know, the way she has her lips turned up on the side and she just seems to be very, I don't know. I don't like her necessarily, but she's good at what she does. You have to respect her as being a professional. She's good at what she does. But does that mean that somebody has the right and the privilege and should attack her, you know, at her gender? That they should go after her in such a rude and obnoxious way? So saying no PC is kind of a PC thing to say, I guess. Saying I'm not PC is the new politically correct thing to say. So I guess it's now politically correct to not be politically correct, which means it's politically correct to be rude, obnoxious, arrogant, sexist, and to say whatever the hell you think anytime you feel like it. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Voice of Reason on TalkZone.com. Here's your host, Deneen Minette.
Welcome back. We're talking about Trump and the entire movement behind him, the entire anti-PC campaign, which basically, in my opinion, is directly related to I can be rude anytime I want. I can continue to oppress anytime I want. I can use hate speech anytime I want because I'm not being PC, and so now I'm allowed to do that, you know. And then when the new I'm going to punch you in the mouth because you're being rude and obnoxious and hateful, when that movement starts, then everybody's going to have a problem. But you know what? When you push people to the edge and when you're just obnoxious, then you cannot really prepare yourself adequately for people's response. You cannot get properly prepared for how somebody is going to react when you back them into a corner. And so this new movement of not being civilized and just kind of shooting from the hip, doing whatever I want, saying whatever I want, whenever, to whomever, as much as I want, is really going to get us in trouble as a people and as a society. It's the beginning of something that has actually got started quite a few years ago, but it's come to a point now where people are just mad. And I think that this entire movement and grouping supporters behind Trump is based in this anger, this simmering anger that is so much a part of our culture, our country, our society. And where did it come from? Where did this anger come from? When did it get to such a boiling point as it is now that it's spilling over into everyday people turning into monsters and folks celebrating that? When did this start? Where did it come from? Because it wasn't this way back in the day. I have an idea and a thought on where I think it came from and when I think it started. I honestly think that ever since September 11th, we have been pissed off. We're angry and we're mad that a third world country pretty much came in and kicked our ass. While we were enjoying Labor Day, back to school, getting ramped up for the holiday season, laying around on the beach, enjoying Indian summer and having a really great time, a third world country kicked our ass, caught us sleeping. And ever since then, we've been mad as hell. Ever since that time, there has been a simmering, brewing, erupting anger because here we are, the top of the free world, and these folks who live in caves and in huts came over here and destroyed our peace, our way of life, our comfort, our sense of protectedness and our stability. They came over here while we were laying on the beach and sipping on a Mai Tai, strolling back and forth through the airport at free will. They got their selves together. They came out of their huts. They formulated and they came over here and whooped us. They bamboozled us. They sucker punched us. And America has been pissed off ever since. And because of that, we're fighting. It's like a family. It's like a family that just got sucker punched with, you know, that has the alcoholic or whoever it is that's causing all kinds of ruckus in the house. And we're in fighting now. We're fighting within ourselves because we don't feel safe anymore because we got caught sleeping. and everybody is mad. You know how when a football team is just losing every game? When the Raiders or when people, it happened with my team, UC Berkeley, Cal football, a couple years ago. They were losing every game. Fights are breaking out at practice. Fights are breaking out in the locker room. You're fighting within yourselves because you can't win. You felt like you lost. We felt like we lost. And even though we can win the war, we lost a very important battle, and it changed our way of life. So whether or not we are able to get a handle on what's going on and the outside threats that are facing this country, inside, we're fighting amongst ourselves because we don't feel safe and secure. Do you ever remember being in school when there was a substitute teacher and the kids were all over the place? It was so unsafe. When children feel unsafe, they act out. When I worked at juvenile hall and there were particular counselors that were working with the kids in the unit, staff members, the guards, and they were weaker than other guards. They couldn't control the group. They couldn't control the atmosphere. Those were the worst shifts because the kids would be fighting and attacking each other and jumping on each other because they didn't feel safe. And when you feel safe, and when there's a parent at home, or when the teacher is there, and you feel as though you're in a safe environment, you can calm down and think rationally and logically and go about your daily activities. But when you don't feel safe, all hell breaks loose. And this country has not felt safe since September 11th. And because we don't feel safe, we're infighting. We're fighting each other. Patriotism, and I've said this on the show before, patriotism now equates to anger. I am more of a patriot the angrier I get. I'm going to hold my flag and I'm going to shove it in your face and I'm going to scream, I'm American! Because I don't feel safe. And I need to now exert my patriotism. It's the number one thing, in your face. The flag has become an in your face thing. It's not as much about being proud and patriotic and supporting this wonderful, great country as it is about sticking it in somebody else's face. This is America. And that all, in my humble opinion, comes from September 11th. Comes from the fact that we were attacked. We got our butts whooped. While we were sleeping, we weren't expecting it. We were sucker punched. And ever since then, we're infighting. We're all infighting. We're mad at everybody. But we're not mad at ourselves. We're mad at everybody else. We're even mad when people aren't mad about what we're mad about. I remember Cecil the Lion. People are all mad. Why are you mad about Cecil the Lion? When there's Black men being murdered on the streets. Why aren't you mad about this? If I had seen the amount of anger about other things in Cecil the Lion, about what's going on with the Kurds, can I be mad at what I'm mad at? Why do I have to have my anger dictated by what you think I should be mad at? As long as I'm mad, that's all that should matter, right? Because we're such an angry country now. It shouldn't matter what we're mad at. It just should matter that we're mad. So can I be mad about Cecil the Lion? Because quite frankly, I mean, truth of the matter is, I mean, just on a side note, I think that I kind of am one of those people who get more upset about things that happen to animals and babies than grown adults. And I guess that's because animals are without sin and therefore they need to be protected because they aren't diabolical and they don't plan mass murders and they just do things that are instinctive. And when you go into their home and draw them out just to slaughter them, I have a problem with that. So yeah, I get a little bit more upset. I have to admit it. I know we're the top of the food chain, but sometimes we're real stupid. And I really have a lot of compassion for animals and I have a lot of compassion for babies because they are the innocent victims that need to be protected in our society. And man is just evil. So I'm one of those people, I have to admit. But in any event, it's just amazing to me that people get mad because you're not mad about what they think you should be mad about. You know, we're in a state right now in this country where we feel like we have to blame everything on everybody else because we are in a perpetual state of madness. Look at Trump. We blame the Mexicans. They're taking our country. We blame the gays. Oh, it's not traditional. Our country's going apart. We blame the blacks. Oh, they're running wild. They're mad about everything. They're so entitled. We blame the liberals. We blame the conservatives. We blame the police. We blame the president. We blame the one percenters. We blame everyone. We blame everyone. Everyone is at fault so that we can continue to stay mad. And as long as you're blaming someone else, it removes your ability to be introspective and figure out what you are doing to be part of the problem. Because blaming is fun. And blaming is easy. And blaming is the thing to do. Because as long as you can blame, you can project. And as long as you can blame, you can stay angry. And you can get others on board with your anger. But it's just, it's exhausting. And it's just every single time I see something on social media or I see something in the news when people are talking about, you know, I'm angry about this. Well, why aren't you angry about that? Why aren't you, as though, you know, while you were over here angry about Cecil, the Iran deal is going through. Why you're over here angry? Like, I have to have an agenda for my anger. Like, I need to check off every box to show that I am a real compassionate person. I have to be angry about every single cause. And I think that's just crap. I really do. Just because I am out here marching and running in the 12K or whatever for breast cancer, just because I'm raising money for breast cancer, that does not mean that I am not also concerned about lung cancer, which took my father's life 14 months ago. Just because I am really advocating for a cure for breast cancer, that does not mean that I am not still giving money to the Sickle Cell Foundation, which took my sister's life. People act as though you can only be concerned and angry and outraged about one thing at a time. And that's just crap. I just don't understand that. It's so frustrating to me, as though your loyalty and your patriotism is in question because of the fact that you are not angry about what other people are angry about. I am able to concentrate on so many different causes at one time, and I actually find it offensive that people question others' ability to be multi-focused, to be able to spread their outrage and interest over several different channels. I don't understand that. It really offends me that people get challenged. Well, while you're worrying about this, what about the soldiers? What about the military? What about the mentally ill? I can have compassion for a bunch of different things. But you know what? I can't walk around angry all the time. Even though this society wants me to walk around angry all the time. Even though, because we were beaten up 15 years ago, I'm supposed to be angry about everything all the time. And in my opinion, that's a recipe for a mental breakdown. You expecting me to be angry all day, every day, about everything that everyone else is angry about, I'm just going to basically be mad all the time. The Warriors won. The Warriors won the NBA championship. There was a big parade here in Oakland. It was fabulous. Everybody was happy. Go on social media after the parade. While you all were celebrating, black men are dying in the streets. Okay, but can I be happy for a minute? Am I allowed to embrace some peace, some tranquility? Can I keep my mind focused on something that is not saddening and depressing? Can I just celebrate life without feeling as though all of a sudden, I'm not being true to the cause? I'm a sellout? God, it's so tiresome. It gets so old. In fact, you know what? I'm getting angry about the fact that I'm supposed to stay angry. Ugh. We'll talk a little more about this when we come back.
Welcome back to the Voice of Reason. Here's Deneen Manette.
Welcome back for our third segment of The Voice of Reason, and I've been talking about anger. I've been talking about why Americans are so angry, why the entire Trump campaign, the Trump machine, seems to be based on anger. And a lot of people are saying that. He's unfiltered. He's real. He's saying the things people aren't trying to say or wanting to say. And it just seems like this entire thing is based on anger, lashing out at others, lashing out at the illegal immigrants, and lashing out on things within this country, our neighbors, that are not taking care of business, lashing out against our president. He's too soft. Lashing out against everything that is, because we need to revamp. We need to get back to a stronger America. We need to be respected in the world. We're not respected right now. I get that. I get that. But the level of anger that is associated with these positions is quite frankly alarming. It really is. And you wonder why there are people opening fire on institutions, and it's not about the guns. It's about the anger. We're so mad. And why are we so mad? Because we don't feel safe. Because we don't feel safe. And unfortunately, we can't go back and unring this bell. We can't go back and make it so that we were not attacked in our sleep while we were celebrating Labor Day, while we were getting our kids ready to start the first day of school, while we were gearing up for the holidays, while we were coming off of our summer and enjoying the nice warm weather in New York. We can't go back to and unring that bell. We can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. It is what it is. And here we are. So basically, recognizing it as what it is and where it came from may be the first step, but I don't know what we're going to do. It just seems like things have just gotten to another level. Protests and movements, they're all based on anger now. What happened to the peaceful protests? I remember when I was in college at UC Berkeley, and we were protesting about anti-apartheid in South Africa, and we wanted the UC Regents to divest resources from South Africa because of their governmental system of anti-apartheid. We protested. We marched. I even got arrested twice for doing sit-ins because, of course, if you go to UC Berkeley, you've got to get arrested. It's part of it's par for the course. You know, going to Berkeley equals getting arrested. It's part of the entire Cal Berkeley experience. So, of course, I was going to make sure I got arrested before I left out of there. And I'm glad I did. So anyway, because it's something to be able to come back and say, I fought the power. But you know what we didn't do? We didn't break things. We didn't vandalize. We didn't shoot the police or throw things at them. We had these large, large, peaceful protests. We were trying to move something forward. We were not trying to attack what is. We were trying to advance a cause and bring light to something that was a grievance. But we were not trying to utilize those that were there to keep the protest organized as weapons. Those weren't weapons. Those weren't targets. Those weren't things that we needed to attack in order to get our message out, because our message would have been lost. So that's what I miss. I miss the peaceful protests. I don't know what happened to them. Look what's happening in Ferguson right now. For God's sake, they got a state of emergency declared yesterday. And for what? What is the goal? What are we accomplishing? It's not going to matter what you are talking about when you're shooting at the police and breaking windows of people who are regular working class citizens every day. I understand people are saying, we gotta bring light to this. We've gotta show we're mad as hell and we're not gonna take it anymore. I get that. But so far, we have been able to open the dialogue about police brutality and race relations and constant damaging of property and shooting at the police is not furthering the cause. And let me be the first to say, I'm sorry. I've never really signed on to Mike Brown being the poster child of the Black Lives Matter movement. I mean, that's something that I just have always felt really strongly about. I've always felt as though him being the mantra, him being the person that we carry into battle, the Mike Brown flag, has always, in my opinion, been misguided. There are Tamir Rice's. There are plenty of other people that were brutally killed and maimed by the police that are a great representation of a movement, which in my opinion, I think people have misunderstood. They're misunderstanding it as Black Lives Matter as though no other lives matter, when actually there's a silent word two at the end of Black Lives Matter. So rather than being Black Lives Matter, it's actually Black Lives Matter two. Black Lives Matter also, because, you know, culturally and systematically and historically, Black lives have mattered less in this country than any other lives. And so basically, it's been a way to say, hey, Black lives matter too. We matter also. But because that word is not on the end, people assume that that means that only Black lives matter, and that's just not the case. So I think that's been worded a little differently in order to make people feel a little bit more understanding of what the cause is, because it's basically saying, hey, I'm alive, I matter, I've got cells and tissue and bones, and I'm important in a brain, I'm important as well as everybody else. Can Black lives matter too? But it wasn't phrased that way, so here we are. But I've never felt as though the Mike Brown story was he should be at the forefront of this, because I just think that there's so much that happened during that incident. I mean, you know, we take a large young man who goes and throws an older gentleman half his size against a wall and takes his property without, you know, giving it a second thought. And then boldly at 12:03 in the afternoon in a stark white shirt, he's walking down the middle of the street after he's just committed a felony. To me, that goes to a state of mind. So if you just committed this felony and you're now walking down the middle of the street and see a police officer pass by and don't take off running because of the fact that you just committed a felony, that tells me that you don't give a damn and that you're pretty much okay with everything in your life. That this is normal to you, that you're ego tripping as well. The cop, he may have been ego tripping, but for you to have just committed a felony and are now boldly in a stark white shirt walking down the middle of the street at high noon saying, I don't give a F, I could care less, I don't give a damn, when the cop goes by, you know, even when you're speeding and you see the cop, you slow down because you know you're doing something you shouldn't be doing. Even when you're coming up to a yellow light and you see a cop at the intersection, you break as opposed to going through it just because you know that you really maybe shouldn't be doing that. But the fact that you're just walking down the street when a cop comes up and approaches you, regardless of what happened after that, that tells me a state of mind situation. So I think that there's just so much that went on in that interaction altercation that I just don't think that he was a good face of the Black Lives Matter movement, because I think that, you know, honestly, truth of the matter is, I think he knows why he's dead, and I'm just going to put it out there. So I think there's plenty of other people. There's plenty of other innocent males, females of all colors, honestly, that can highlight the issue of police brutality, which is what I feel is the basis and the crux of all of that. But, you know, we as Americans are always looking for conspiracy theories. We are always looking for conspiracy theories, and I'm guilty of it, too. The Malaysia Flight 370. They found the wing, but in my mind, I still think that that plane was sold to ISIS or somebody, and they're turning it into a missile, and that it's going to resurface one day as it flies towards one of our national monuments, and that it was a big conspiracy. And I think that they just dropped that wing over there in the Indian Ocean as a way to divert attention. So I'm guilty of it too. I still have this huge conspiracy theory. I have some, you know, I'm guilty of it too, but this whole Sandra Bland thing, I mean, my gosh, I came out and said that I don't think she was murdered, and I was butchered on social media. I was completely attacked. So, you know, I was totally attacked. I went the other direction. I said, you know, yeah, the cop acted inappropriately. Yes, the cop, you know, got really was high strung and took that to a level he didn't need to take it to. When he went up and asked her to put out her cigarette when she refused, he should have said, you know what? You go ahead and smoke your cigarette and I'll finish this ticket when you're finished. When you're finished smoking your cigarette, because I don't like smoke blown in my face, you keep on smoking and I'll stand over here until you're done. You know, she would have put that cigarette out in a heartbeat, because the fact that nobody wants to sit there on the side of the road and smoke a cigarette while a cop is in your face. You know, but anyway, I think he escalated that situation. But do I think she was murdered? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I've worked in jails. I just don't think that any jailer is going to risk their job to kill someone 3 days after a cop brought them in. The cop has no jurisdiction over the jail. The cop doesn't control what happens in the jail. The cop drops the person off and goes back on their beat. They could care less what happens in the jail. She wasn't being obnoxious, kicking, beating, screaming, tearing stuff apart. You know, they didn't kill her, but they allowed her. They didn't watch her. She was had mental health issues. There was a plastic garbage bag in her room, which was completely unconscionable to me. So yeah, there's some civil liability issues here, but I don't think there's any great conspiracy theory. I don't think that anybody conspired to kill her because there was no reason. The cop felt as though him and the other cop that showed up on the scene were covered after she was arrested. Oh, glad we have the camera. They didn't think there was any problem. Nobody killed her. But Lord forbid that I rebuke the conspiracy theory as I did and was attacked. Because I'm just, you know, you gotta believe in a conspiracy. You gotta stay mad. You just gotta stay angry. You gotta think that there's some big plot. You know, we're all hyper vigilant now and hyper awake just because of the fact that, you know, we were attacked. We got caught asleep. And now because of that, we're completely hyper vigilant. We're on guard all the time. And if you aren't seeing a conspiracy theory, then you have a problem. If you're not angry, then you have a problem. If you're using language that's politically correct and you're being soft or compassionate or forgiving or giving, then you have a problem. If you're not angry enough, if you're not outraged by every single thing you see on the 24-hour news cycle, every single thing you read on Facebook or Twitter, everything that happens in the sky. If you're not mad about every single thing, then you have a problem. But you know what, folks? We all have a problem. The United States of America and Americans need to get our act together. Because in my opinion, this incident from 15 years ago ruined us. It ruined us. And because of that, we have not been able to recover. We cannot find our footing. And rather than come together as a people and express our outrage and anger towards our enemies, we are expressing it towards each other. We're infighting as though we have a substitute teacher. I don't know what we're going to do about it. Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk a little infidelity.
Welcome back to the Voice of Reason. Here's Deneen Manette.
Well, we're back, and as I stated at the top of the show, I am an infidelity expert, wrote a book on infidelity, have run infidelity support groups for many, many, many years. And at the end of every show, I like to take an infidelity question or two and see if I can't help somebody work through an issue or a problem that they're experiencing in their marriage. I want to start off, though, talking briefly about this Ben Affleck situation with Jennifer Garner and him reportedly having an affair with the nanny that people are speculating broke up his marriage to Jennifer. Now, Ben Affleck is 42. The nanny, Christine Azuwunian, don't know how to pronounce that, she's 28. And speculation began brewing because they were seen all over. They were seen meeting late at night and in some place or whatever. Anyway, speculation began brewing after Ben and Jennifer announced their separation. And people are thinking that maybe this nanny, most likely, is part of the problem. And paparazzi's been following her around. Well, she has now come out, you know, on Twitter, and she's posting or Instagram, and is posting these pictures of herself and in her little cutesy self talking about, you know, here I am, quoting some words to some song. Anyway, I don't even know. Like, she's just, you know, all that in a bag of chips. And basically, she has been rumored to have been talking to her friends about this and bragging about the fact that she broke up this marriage and that her and Ben were sleeping together. And she seems pretty proud of herself and she's pretty excited about this whole thing. It seems like this is her big score. But it's interesting that this, her becoming more public on Instagram, social media, and putting herself out there, and her commentary didn't begin until Ben and Jennifer started being seen together over this past weekend. They were together with the kids at some event. They weren't interacting, holding hands, or showing any affection, but they are both still wearing their wedding bands. And I guess that kind of pissed her off. And now she's gone on the offensive and needs to let it be known that she's got this blue dress. Or, sorry, that she is, you know, the woman, and she's the reason, and that they were sleeping together. And, I mean, you know, okay, great. Good for you. You were able to lay down, put your butt up in the air for a married man, and that makes you, what, unique? Special? Exciting? I mean, seriously? Really? This chick, I think, is so delusional. As so many home wreckers are, and groupies are, that feel as though because they're near and in and cute and young and perky breasty, that they can come in there and just, you know, woo somebody's husband away. Now, granted, nobody can be wooed who didn't want to leave. So, you know, basically, if he had his boundaries straight and if he was a together guy, then this wouldn't even be an issue. But the fact that she is out on social media just kind of acting like she's just got it going on and that she's done something really great and special because she had sex with somebody's husband is repulsive to me. And I think she's now in panic mode because she probably envisioned herself getting this guy, getting him to leave his wife, marry her, be with her. She gets to live in this mansion and have this great life, and that it's all going to be good, that it's all going to be fine and well. And I think that the fact that he's still with his wife, the mother of his children, and they're still wearing rings is a threat to her, as it should be. Because, honey, you're the nanny. You're a plaything. You're a warm place to put it. If you see it any differently, then you're delusional. And the fact that you have envisioned yourself playing house with this woman's husband is, you know, shame on you. Because it's not going to work that way, sweets. Even if him and Jennifer do get divorced and go their separate ways, the likelihood of him now taking up with you, the nanny, the 28-year-old nanny, is really slim, sweetheart. It's easy because it was convenient. Because he saw you in a nurturing role taking care of the children. Because he was a pig and he took advantage of a fool. But for you to actually think for 1 minute that he has far-reaching plans to be with you, or that he really even gives a damn about you other than, you know, in the dark, you're a fool. You really are. And I just, you know, it's just sad, but this happens all the time. And I just am really interested to see how this plays out. Do I think Ben and Jen will get divorced? Probably. Do I think he's going to end up with the home-wrecking nanny whore? No, I don't think so. I don't think it's going to happen. So let me get to my infidelity question, because I'm running out of time, and this one looks like a juicy one. Sarah writes, my husband and I have been married for 3 years, but we dated for 4 prior to that. Now, I want you guys to keep track of the math on this one. This is pretty good. My husband and I have been married for 3 years, but we dated for 4 prior to that. We have 2 boys, ages 6 and 11 months. We are doing happily, I guess that's what she means, and everything was fine until about 6 months ago when he hooked up with an ex from high school on Facebook. I'm not sure how long the affair lasted, but by the time I found out about it, it was pretty public. He unfriended her on Facebook, but they still have friends in common. He says they have no communication, but I keep catching him in lies. He says he doesn't tell me when she contacts him because he doesn't want me to get mad. I'm trying to trust him, but it's hard because he keeps lying. He says, I'm just paranoid, but I really don't want to lose him. This is the second marriage for both of us. I was divorced in 2010 and him in 2011. So we took plenty of time before getting married again. I'm just really worried. What should I do? Well, Sarah, starting off, I did a little math and I looked at the numbers on this and I see that you say that you've been married for 3 years. So this is 2015, 14, 13, 12. And you dated for 4 years prior to that, 11, 10, 9, 8. That tells me that you've been dating since 2008 and that you have 2 boys. The oldest one is 6 years old and you've been dating and married for 7 years. So that means that one was born probably about 2009, which means you were probably pregnant in 2008. Okay, now we go to the end of your letter where it says, I was divorced in 2010 and him in 2011. So, I don't know. I went to law school because there was no math on the test, but if I do these calculations, looks like you started dating him 2 years before you were divorced, and you may have gotten pregnant 1 year before you were divorced, and he didn't get divorced till 2011. Well, maybe, you know, you guys were separated from your spouses or whatever, but from the looks of things to me, sounds like you guys started getting a little bit of nookie before you were off the hook. It looks to me like maybe you guys hooked up while you were both still committed to other people. And if that is indeed the case, gosh, what a bummer for you. Because what you have now learned is that your spouse is capable of doing to you what he did to someone else. Now, there are a lot of people who feel like, you know, they're married to somebody who is incapable of cheating. And when that person does cheat, it's a big, like, red flag. It's just kind of like a big, oh my gosh, you know, reality check. But in your situation, if he was indeed with you prior to being divorced from his wife and you with him, then that already sets the standard here. That already sets the benchmark. That lets me know and everyone know that it's in him to carry on multiple relationships. It is in him to be unfaithful, and he has the ability to live a double life. So there will be, if that is the case, there will always be a degree of distrust that you will hold because of the fact that this relationship started with unclean hands. That this relationship got off to a bad start, an unhealthy start, and an immoral start. Because both of you appear, from what I'm reading, to have been in a commitment prior to this that was not honored because you were sleeping with, and making babies with somebody else. So if that is indeed the case, you've got a long road. And it may never work, quite honestly. Because, you know, when you sleep with someone else's husband and they become your husband, you can't really get agitated when somebody else sleeps with him. I mean, it is what it is. What's good for the goose is good for the gander, right? I mean, what are you expecting? So he hooked back up with an ex from high school on Facebook, which is the big Satan, Facebook. Everybody's able to stay in your life and be in your life. But it seems to me like this guy may be of poor moral character. It seems like you both may be a poor moral character, but we're just going to focus on him right now because you're the one writing with the concern. Seems like he may be of poor moral character. And the fact that he still has friends with this person that are in common, and the fact that he's getting irritated with you because he's calling you paranoid, which are deflective things. Whenever someone starts calling you paranoid and saying you're just really insecure and you have a problem and you need to get over this and blah, 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 that means they're not really interested in putting in the work to make sure that the relationship is repaired. That means that they are still being narcissistic and it's all about them, and they are wanting you to respect their comfort level or level of discomfort, and you're refusing to do that, which is a problem for them, which shows that they are still in the it's all about me state of mind, which means that they are still at a place where they want you to appease them and make them feel comfortable, even though they did something and brought somebody else, some outsider, into this relationship. So that's a problem. The timeline is a problem for me. The fact that he still has common friends that he communicates with is a problem for me. The fact that he is telling you you need to get over it and you need to move on and you need to, you know, you're being paranoid and whatever, you know, that you keep catching him in lies. You can't build up trust with anybody who continues to lie to you. You can't build a relationship until you get to the bottom of what's true. And once you get to the bottom of what's true, you've got to start building again. And every truthful thing he tells you that checks out builds up trust. You're not building up any trust because he's still lying. I don't know. I don't know if this one's going to work out, sweetheart. I hope that if everything was entered into on the up and up, that it does, because you've got children involved now and it would be nice if we could keep their home intact. But I don't know if this relationship is going to make it. I can't tell you that it is. A lot more work's to be done. Needs to be done. You all need to get into some counseling and do something different. Okay. That's it. I'm out of time. I will see you all next Thursday, same place, same time. We'll address some hard-hitting issues as well as our infidelity question. Feel free to email me your questions at any time at dmanette@yahoo.com. Thanks so much. Have a great week, folks, and I'll see you next time.